Welcome to The Weekly Trend, a podcast for navigating the markets through the lens of technical analysis. The Weekly Trend podcast is provided for educational purposes only and does not constitute any professional advice. Listeners should not act upon the information or content without first seeking advice from a registered financial planner.
Welcome back to the Weekly Trend podcast. Today is Friday, April 12th. S&P 500 currently sitting at 5124. I'm David Zarling. I'm here with a man who's getting his garden ready, Ian McMillan. It's springtime.
It's springtime, man.
It's a good time of year.
I'm excited. Made multiple trips to Home Depot and the local nursery.
Yep. What you got lined up? What's going in the garden?
Lilies.
Okay.
Hydrangeas.
Hydrangeas. Okay. Now you say hosta, I say hosta. Is that
I think the lady at the nursery says hosta too. But
okay,
you know, when you're from the South, we pronounce things.
Yeah, like how do you say pecan?
Pecan.
Yeah. Hosta, hosta.
Yeah.
Pecan. Doesn't matter. Hydrangeas are the ones with the big poofy ball flowers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Does your lawn have stripes?
Yes.
See, this is a great time of year. We have plenty to talk about in this episode. You know, we could talk about a UConn championship. We could talk about a South Carolina championship. We could talk about the eclipse. We could also talk about, oh my goodness, the market has had two back-to-back red weeks.
Two.
Market's crashing, Ian.
Or is that the first time? Yeah, first time since the October lows.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could argue that the week of March 4th and the week of March 11th, maybe we're back-to-back negative. But your point is more valid, not like this. And when I say like this, I don't want to make it sound like overly dramatic, right? We've got a 3% pullback on our hands. It's so interesting to watch the sentiment for something like a 3% pullback. And it could be more. I mean, it can turn into more. We can see more weakness. But on average, which markets are go beyond the average, typically you see in any given year, 3% dips. Like you see almost seven of those. You see three separate 5% corrections. You might have a 10% correction once a year. Like that's pretty standard. That data is from Ryan Dietrich. I mean, that is, markets don't go in a straight line. So do we get a pullback here that lasts April and May? That would be perfectly healthy. But yet
first of all, seasonality promised me a sell-off last month.
It did.
That's why I was told that that's how averages play out.
Because seasonality was negative for March, that's what we were supposed to see this month in March.
It averages negative over the last 15 years. So why would it should be negative this year?
But it's also information when it's not.
It's not. And if it ends up being rotation, then we say that rotation is the lifeblood of bull markets, but then we get it and everyone gets frustrated.
And when you say rotation, for someone who might not be familiar with that term, what do you mean by rotation?
Just back and forth between what's in favor, what's outperforms. So like I would say last year, we didn't get a lot of rotation.
So it's just like an ebb and flow. Like it could be an ebb and flow between growth and value.
Over weeks, months, quarters.
Right.
Things fall out of favor. They come back in favor. They fall out of favor. Something new comes in favor.
An example of this would be
pretty healthy.
Yeah, like if we look at like energy versus tech or XLK versus XLE, so tech versus energy, since the bottom in November of 2022, you had tech in favor until July of 23, then energy was in favor until October of 23, and then tech was in favor until January of 24, and then energy was in favor again for the past 2 months. But it doesn't have to stay that way. Like both are in uptrends.
Yeah.
But that rotation happens and it's perfectly normal. And we see it in healthy markets. And I know you've shared some charts internally and externally that highlight that maybe we're on the verge of seeing a shift back to growth at this point.
Or even, I mean, I guess it sounds weird to say it, but we also shared this. When did the letter to clients go out? Last week?
Yeah, last week. Yeah.
Of all the, I guess we'll go with the media's term here, but is the inflation trade, you look across the board. So to hear that not only is the inflation, it seems to be, I mean, under the surface, not just under the surface anymore, but it's really bubbled to the surface at this point. And then this return of growth, tech, mega cap, maybe outperforming now, as we talked about yesterday on our team call, that can all outperform to the downside. So we'll wait to see what happens there. But yeah, to your point, energy holding up. Maybe is energy the top sector on the year now?
And we can get there. I just think it's really fascinating what you just brought up there, which is that you could have tech doing well in an inflationary environment. And to answer your question, at the sector level, energy is the top performer for the year at 16%, almost 17%. Then communication services, industrials, financials, and tech, which when you go through that list, that's not exactly a risk-off list.
It's not. No, they did run to mega cap tech March 2020. Not saying that we're going to get some 30% 4-week sell-off. Like NASDAQ underperformed 2022, correct? Yeah.
It's that ebb and flow of markets and just being aware of when some of these relationships change and are you going to capture every basis point move in that change? No. Are there time frames where you are able to capture that relative strength? Yes. Really, the underpinning of that rotation is the understanding that that is a really good dynamic for the market to see it happening. It's kind of like watching a basketball game. And if we're not using all our players, that's a little bit concerning that we would not be moving the ball around to try to create angles, leverage, and lanes to the hoop or open shots for our best shooters. Same thing in markets. If it's only one sector all the time, that's called a narrow market. And if that one sector then rolls over, because I mean, look at tech up to this point using things like Apple. I mean, Apple, I think you shared a chart where it had been flat since October of 23 and the markets moved higher.
Yeah. I mean, Apple's technically been flat since August 2020.
Right.
It's 3.5 years, over 3.5 years. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Apple versus S&P. I apologize. I guess as I said that, that sounded a little. But no, yeah, back to your point.
I think what you were saying is, I mean, I actually love that you brought up the relative piece because on a relative basis, Apple versus the S&P since December of 23 has underperformed the S&P by 23%.
Oof, yeah.
That's not an attribute many would expect out of a market. And now you have this scenario where one of the biggest components of the S&P 500 is sitting in the back pocket. If it rises from here, you could see a rotation into tech stocks, right? Microsoft and NVIDIA have kind of carried ground here. But if you start to see some of these other large cap names, such as Apple and Google, move higher from these levels, and Amazon's right at a near all-time high. Now, Amazon's not tech, I get it, but it's a large cap name. You're right at these important levels across all these other instruments. That if you see those move higher, it's going to get really hard to see the market move lower, significantly lower. Now, different story if Apple's breaking below 168. That's a different scenario.
Yeah. We had yesterday, which buyers came in, where they talking about Apple, where they desperately needed to. But it's one step out of a deep hole that it's kind of built itself into. To your point, it is a deep hole that if dug out of, is a massive tailwind for the market.
Yeah.
We've made all of this. Bucks are basically 18-2 without Giannis. This is what it says to me. And then exactly. Now they're on Twitter saying, Giannis he's back. He's at 95%, expect him back in the lineup. Well, I don't expect the Bucks to fall off after that.
Right. Correct. Yeah. You're seeing a star player potentially rise back into the team and help it move. We'll see. Time will tell. But there's definitely some, last week, Kevin and I covered some red flags and green flags. The prior week, you and I talked about, is it time for small caps? And really, small caps had to stay, above this 200 level for that to be the truth. It's still right there right now. If we're looking at IWM, 199.20.
So disappointing.
And again, the market is great at making sure it understands where supply and demand exists. And so even if we have small caps pull back into 188 using IWM into a rise, what is now a rising 200 day and mm-hmm. the 2021 high volume weighted average price level and a level that's the bottom of the value area, if you do volume analysis, that would be an environment where do you see tech hold up, small caps pull back, which has that underperformance because IWM versus S&P is right at that horizontal level that kind of needs a hold. And then that rotation happens again after the next few months. But that would be perfectly healthy. But it's, speaking of relative levels, the relative level that hasn't held is the Dow Jones versus S&P.
Disgusting. Obviously, UNH, the largest holding in Dow, breaking lower this week from a 2.5 year consolidation, November 2021. Not a good look. I mean, it hasn't been a good look for a while. I mean, it's been below its 200 day for over a month now. You don't need to own anything below a flat 200 day. But yeah, Dow.
Yeah, new. United Healthcare. I think United Healthcare is an interesting canary. I don't want to call it a canary in the coal mine, but it's an interesting chart from the standpoint of you're now talking about a 2 year consolidation that's breaking down. So if that is confirming, it could turn into a false breakdown, but if that is saying that was all distribution and that's the largest holding in the Dow Jones, and it's the largest holding or second largest holding in something like XLV.
I mean, XLV, massive failed breakout here this week.
Yes.
You look at a weekly chart. Yeah, I mean, it's an upward sloping 200 day. So we get some points for that. But that XLV below 142 is tough. That's a tough look.
Well, and I'll add that XLV versus S&P overall, that is breaking a rate of trend that goes back to 24 years ago, the year 2000. And it, ironically, healthcare looks sick. Like, it does not look good. And you got it, one of its leaders, United Healthcare, breaking important levels. I mean, thank goodness Eli Lilly is holding up. But even Johnson & Johnson is at important horizontal levels.
Yeah.
And breaking a rate of trend.
Well, I guess after the last few years, if one industry had to bite the bullet, I wouldn't be the saddest to see pharmaceutical companies. I don't want to say healthcare industry because there's so many good people in the healthcare industry.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
But there's maybe a discussion for another day. But yeah, healthcare, weak, weak, weak. A lot of these big names, like you said, UNH, Johnson & Johnson. Thankfully for Eli Lilly, I don't know where these, you know, and Merck's been okay.
But I mean, your point is valid. I mean, it's okay for us to say, hey, there's good people that work in that industry. But let's also have some scrutiny, right? That happens in finance. Finance is one of the most hyper-regulated industries. And I get it, rightfully so, right? Because there's bad actors. We want to make sure we don't have that. But there's good people that work in finance. And it's consistently under the microscope. Why can't healthcare be? Like, why can't we talk about Moderna? And that chart looks like trash. Like, that chart looks...
Fail breakout on AbbVie, which is the sixth highest weighting in XLV. Abbott Laboratories failed breakout of that base. I mean, these things aren't holding. It's not that they can't fix themselves, but healthcare.
And Pfizer continues to get rocked. Pfizer, the market has had a very nice two quarters. And meanwhile, Pfizer is 57% off the highs from January of 22.
Wow. I mean, that thing. If you want to talk about the market telling you that a company, I mean, what a great example, Dave. So we're back to COVID lows.
On an absolute basis. Wait till you look. I'm going to wait till you open this relative chart, Ian. And then I'm going to wait to see
on
what
on an absolute basis, here. Also where we were at early April 2013. So we'll call it 11 years ago. I mean, the absolute chart is just for you out there that are like, oh, well, maybe it's a good value. It's Pfizer. I'm willing to bet that over the coming weeks, months, years, that this stock severely underperforms the S&P.
from a larger time frame. He's not talking about like next week, next month.
Yeah, I mean, it could get a bounce here, but I'm telling you, this is a stock that no one has interest in. Maybe there's some type of triple bottom here. I just don't think you want to own Pfizer.
Well, we're at price levels that we haven't seen on a relative basis since 1977.
1977. Think about that.
It's been nothing but a sell-off now. And here we have
77.
Don't worry if it's COVID, get Paxlovid company telling us in a chart form, things are not all that great. That's the beauty of markets, free markets. We want free markets because it gives us information and there are prices to be paid. And it appears to be that, to your point, investors institutionally don't want to own Pfizer. And for whatever reason, don't want to own United Healthcare.
Or really healthcare in general.
Or healthcare in general. You look at a relative
biotech,
chart.
Look at the biotech relative chart. New relative lows this week. You're looking at like an IBB.
It was so promising, IBB, for a split second there.
It was. And, you know, same with banks and same with small caps as a whole. And just cannot do it yet. We ran into a big neckline for Russell 2000 up here at 2100. You know, you can zoom out on a chart of that index and it's a very, very clear line in the sand. So eventually one day we will get through it, but yeah, a hard rejection, and we've seen that in the underlying areas, banks, biotech, energy holding in there.
You just mentioned something there, energy, right, has been a leader since the lows, the COVID lows. You know, late 2020, you know, we'll call it that 6 month period between March and September. In that period, we've seen energy lead. At the same time, we saw tech lead, and we've seen things like Eli Lilly lead and continue to do so, NVIDIA. And those characteristics haven't changed. So it's not like the characteristics that started off the COVID bottom have changed. And that's important information too. If we were seeing Eli Lilly roll over and NVIDIA roll over, that's some other dynamic, you know, that typically is the characteristic you see for the end of a bull leg. But it is notable to see a sector like XLV really struggle on a relative basis here, for sure. But talk about energy. I interrupted you there.
Energy, well, you know, whether it's crude prices going higher, I don't know. Obviously, they're correlated. Lots of commodities going higher. Some commodities going lower.
Which commodities are those? Which ones are going lower?
Sugar, soybeans, milk, cotton,
grains.
Lumber looks brutal. Net gas. And then on the flip side, you got coffee, silver, gold, cocoa. We talked about crude, gasoline, platinum, copper. So metals. So oil, metals.
Oh, and you've got
breakfast is getting expensive. I mean, and bacon's getting expensive. Bacon and coffee, if that's your go-to in the morning, just letting you know, that expense is going to be going up.
Yeah, maybe switch
to milk.
Yeah, you're halfway to a good brunch there.
Yeah, then you can spend more money on gas getting a brunch.
Yeah, you might have to do that at home.
Chocolate's up. We told the kids there's no we'll do s'mores with just the graham cracker and marshmallows this summer.
I don't know what mallow futures look like. You might just have to toast the graham.
Yeah. We'll just have to put it in like the tongs and tough. But yeah, commodities overall, again, part of that is the inflation trade coming back. There's inflation beneficiaries, ETF, INFL, it's done pretty good. It's had a nice rebound, maybe even like a failed breakdown on a relative basis.
Well, and you've got something like TIP.
Yeah.
So inflation protected versus IEF, you know, government instrument right at the highs from October of 23.
Wow.
And it's interesting. There's a couple things lining up that have some similarities from October of 23, whether it's where the yen is at versus the dollar or something like TIP versus IEF. You know, you mentioned some relationships in the past, but we're at those same spots in something like XLE versus XLK. So there's all these relationships that are kind of back to a horizontal level of where they were in October of 2023.
About currencies.
Yeah, well, we've got that JPY USD breaking down. That has been, when we've seen that head in a downtrend, has been since basically, what is this, 2021, yeah. January of 2021.
Yeah,
When that relationship's been weak, equities have been weak, but even more importantly, treasuries have been weak. And here we have an environment where treasuries are showing weakness again, meaning rates moving higher.
It's a raising rate environment. You cannot be surprised. We've said this before, right, Dave? We are likely like 3 years into a 30-year to 40-year cycle. So we are on, if it is 2050 and we are on episode 9,000 of this podcast and we're talking about rates going up, I'm just telling you, don't be surprised.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we do not get to be surprised by rising rates, but everything we've talked about, rising energy, rising base metals, we haven't talked about Freeport-McMoRan.
It's not just copper and silver, or gold and silver, your coppers, your palladiums.
That's all inflationary, you know? It is. Like, it's worth paying attention to these things when they've reared their head in the past. Typically means lower prices for treasuries, which is a huge component of the bond complex. You know, I think a red flag this week was junk bonds breaking down out of a range that's existed, a range being, you know, a sideways move between using JNK 93 and 95. We broke down recently and that range existed since the end of last year. But as you've highlighted in the past, what's interesting is to see junk move less down than equivalent duration treasuries. Meaning when you compare something like JNK versus IEF, you're still in an uptrend. So really the supply of junk is outpacing demand, but it's at less of a pace than it is for treasury. So what does that say about government debt?
They must hate it.
They do. And that would match a 30.
They'd rather own some crappy little $200 million market cap exploration company based out of Houston. May or may not survive. Who knows? They'd rather own that debt than the U.S. government's debt. Just telling you, that's the context how I see it.
Yep. Agreed. And so, that's why
you think about that tonight when you're laying in bed.
You can't just blindly have a 60-40 portfolio. You can't. Yep. You just can't own 40% in bonds. And then if you do, you better be really careful what's in that 40%. And our clients are familiar that we're very short duration. There's yield there. We don't have to play the volatility game. We don't have to be involved with long duration treasuries. We could be on the short end and still generate yield in that portion of the model. But yet, I would say our industry hasn't necessarily adopted that yet. I think there's a fair amount of the industry that's still long duration focused. Their clients are likely paying the price for that. And we have seen when treasuries have moved lower that sometimes stocks have moved lower. You know, that is what would happen in a different environment where you have rising rates and bonds falling, is that you may have them now, the risk parity is gone and everything's correlation to one, at least between stocks and bonds.
Gold still looks good though.
It does. And I think, isn't it a curiosity what gold is doing? Not only is it ripping in foreign currencies.
Isn't that wild what it's doing with the dollar going up?
Yeah, that's tremendous information.
Man, they really want to own gold.
They're willing to do it with dollars that are more expensive. Could be inflation, could be risk off, but typically you see the yen being bought in risk off, but a lot of these relationships might be changing. I always get nervous when I say something like that because it sounds a little bit like this time is different, but I don't know that it is different if we're just talking about cycles that come and go. They're just at time frames that our minds can't comprehend, right? If your lifespan's 80 plus years, 90 years, so you get one full peak to trough to peak cycle of interest rates. It's really hard to wrap your mind around how some of these things might change in their relationships because
of all the biases that get built in. Like, so we were talking about, I mean, didn't have anything to do with necessarily the podcast, but you and I were talking about that before of my dad and my son are probably going to get similar interest rate cycles. I'm going to get stuck with rising rates. Thanks a lot, nature.
Well, there's going to be advantages there too, because there might be some more differentiation in the marketplace. And what I mean by that is the last rising rate environment, you did have stagnation in equities in the 70s. But the beginning part of that interest rate cycle, you saw the Nifty 50, not the India stock market, but the big conglomerates of the 50s and 60s do really, really well. Well, we just got done talking about large cap trends. And so does it just continue to be a narrow market environment with large cap carrying the way, interest rates rising, so you don't get anything out of long duration bonds, but also during that time frame, commodities did well. And so are we just at the beginning phase of a commodity super cycle where you're seeing
be nice?
And so there's differentiation there, right? There's, our clients are familiar that we have some exposure to metals and mining and energy, which is like, what is energy from? I mean, it's what, 3% of the S&P 500? There is an environment here where, do you have a process for identifying when those things are in favor? And we do. Our adaptive process, we use relative strength.
I put your home address down for my physical delivery. I hope you're okay with that.
For the gold?
Well, for cocoa.
Okay.
There's a few trucks that'll probably be...
Honey, there's a couple pallets of cocoa in the driveway. Our clients will really appreciate the pallets of cocoa.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
One contract of the coffee, which was like 10,000 pounds for one for one contract. So
10,000 beans?
Well, yeah, you guys get that. I mean, you guys get the, I figured it was okay. You guys got like the larger driveway and one of your kids is at college. So
yeah,
you do.
Well, Emily loves coffee. That's very thoughtful of you. And we've got a grinder, one of those little tiny grinders.
There you go. Right. You just got to walk out in the garage, scoop some up. You have years of coffee.
Yeah.
So enjoy.
It'll always smell good too out there.
I mean, who wouldn't want to wake up to like just 24/7 smell of coffee on their clothes, in their house, in their bedding?
Good news, honey. We're down to 9,999 pounds of coffee. We're almost there. No, I think that's great. Physical delivery. We should always take physical delivery.
I take physical delivery.
What I do appreciate, though, is that if we have a changing environment, there's nothing wrong with that. Let's just have a tool to identify when that's taking place. And right now, gold continues to follow through after a breakout of a significant range. And doing it while the dollar's rising. And we're seeing oil move higher. I don't know what to tell people. Those are, oil and gold are two big pieces of the commodity puzzle, and silver is right there with it. And the miners of those metals are doing well, and that is indicative of that type of market environment. And then you have base metals with, you know, Dr. Copper and Freeport-McMoRan trying to go out at new all-time highs. You have ExxonMobil, right, the poster child for big energy. Now that's trying to sell back off this week, but it just created new highs.
Steel stocks were, well, I guess until today, they'd been on a nice relative run.
They had. And that's okay. And that's good. What about physical delivery of Bitcoin? What do we do with that?
Bitcoin versus gold is relationships. And I think that's an interesting chart. I mean, you're there. Like, I could see, you know, gold bugs winning for a little bit here.
Wouldn't that be just a fantastic sentiment study that you launch 11 Bitcoin ETFs that bring in, you know, billions of dollars to these firms, and from that point forward, gold starts outperform?
Would be.
Kind of probably tick off the Bitcoin maxis. We haven't talked to
them. I mean, I don't know. I got exposure to both, so we'll see which one wins, and then I'll sell whatever one doesn't.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good way to go. What are we seeing internationally? We don't just talk about those things.
You know what I noticed yesterday? Speaking of international, I'm glad you brought this up. You know what's held up pretty well during all this? Emerging markets.
Yeah.
Again, until today. But you looked at a relative chart. I mean, emerging markets, now, I'm like over the last couple weeks, emerging markets have outperformed. But yeah, held up well. Now, am I buying emerging markets? That hole's so deep.
It is. And there's spots, right? It's Japan.
There are, yeah.
Argentina. But when you look at them in a whole, in totality, like emerging markets versus S&P, like you said, had done well, but still in a massive downtrend. VEU, like the total world market minus U.S. stocks, still in a major downtrend. Meanwhile, you got places like Japan and Argentina, and there's others.
Currency hedge Japan back up to new relative highs. Crazy to think about. I guess not. I mean, Ian, it's been in an uptrend. So,
and, you know, here we are. You know, you brought up seasonality earlier. Dietrich shared a really nice chart about seasonality that the first part of April, since I believe it was, you know, the 1980s, actually, I'm sorry, since year 2000, the beginning part of April has always been kind of flat, with April 15th being where things pick back up, which starts next week. Does that happen? Doesn't
it happen? It better happen, Dave. What did we get for? I should know this off the top of my head. I think I know, but I'm going to ask. I think it was 2 to 3 negative. What did we get for the January stuff? Like Santa Claus rally was what? Negative?
Santa Claus rally was negative.
First 5 days, negative. No, positive. And then January was negative, correct? As a whole.
Yeah, the first 5 days were negative. Santa Claus rally was negative. I believe January was actually positive. And that has a more, and it makes sense, right?
Okay, it was.
If January is positive, that makes sense on how a year might go. It's kind of like, you know, if you're up in the first quarter, the likelihood of winning is probably higher than the likelihood of losing in a football game. So same thing, you know, January of this year was up 1.5%.
So first 5 days was negative.
Correct. Santa Claus rally was negative.
So it was 2 to 3 negative. We pulled it out in the fourth quarter. Like we got.
And everything's within context, right? November, December were just rippers. So to see a pause for that holiday period, it was not surprising. But to see a positive January, it's good. And we continue to be on that path. You know, when we look at markets, you know, the average, I need to ask you this, Ian. So think about this. Think about how markets operate. And here's what I mean. What's the average return of the S&P 500?
Well, now it's up to like.
It's like 9.
9.
9%.
It used to be around 7.5, 8. But of course, you know, we haven't had a multi. Well, I guess we had 2022. But yeah, I think it's up to 9 now.
Yeah, the average return is 9% per year. What's the average drawdown per year pullback? It's minus 14%. So think about that.
Double digits.
So think about that dynamic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing Dietrich's chart.
Yeah, this is Dietrich's chart. So the average year has a minus 14% drawdown, but yet a positive 9% return. And what do we know about humans is they hate loss aversion. And loss aversion is, I'll give an example. If I have $100 in my pocket and somehow lose it, that feeling of losing it is twice or like it supersedes the feeling of finding a $100 bill on the sidewalk. Like it feels worse. By very definition, you get a 9% return, but it feels awful because you had to sit through minus 14. And that's markets. And we're likely going to have some type of corrective behavior, whether it's now or later this year, that brings those feelings in. We typically get minus 5% corrections 3 times a year and a 10% correction once per year. It's just reality. Are we in that period now? I have no idea, but I know you shared a chart internally about election years and how that they can be weak now through May. We might get a 2-month correction.
2 months!
I know, crazy.
We don't have time. I'm trying to make money. And they're selling our gold.
Well,
what are we supposed to buy?
One day.
What are we supposed to buy if they sell it all?
I think it is noteworthy. I mean, April 10th was a minus 80% down day. We could record another one today. That is kind of what you see in kind of corrective behaviors. We haven't seen that near term of downside days since August of last year. So maybe we get a 3-month pullback. But again, this is not going to be the same as the correction that took place in 2022. And the sentiment currently is the market's going to crash. You know, you're seeing that out there. The market's gone too far, too fast. It's going to crash. I have no idea. There's no way for me to predict.
If we get a decent correction here, those flames are only going to be fanned.
Oh, yeah. And
the correction. You know, here it is. I know I've been on my soapbox for 4 years, but here it is.
Well, and that's just it. Like, the people that call for a major market correction, they just keep spouting it until they're right. So you can go like 4 or 5 years spouting, and then you sound like you're right, because typically once every 4.5 years, we get a 20%+ correction. So therefore you're right. We humans are a interesting group. And I would argue that there's many with 1 foot out the door in this environment, based on something like a Dow Jones aggregate put call ratio. We're allowed to have a market that corrects. It's been a really great run, November, December, January, February, March. It's okay if we have a 2-month consolidation or pullback. And the irony will be that those who weren't involved in that market environment that I just talked about will get a market environment that they should then be trying to get into, but they won't due to fear. And likely that fear is based on you don't have a tool such as technical analysis, the study of supply and demand, to tell us when there's a risk reward scenario that makes sense. There's no such thing as eliminating risk when you're involved with markets, but you can use technical analysis to identify when those risk levels are less. So we're never going to be able to stop volatility in a market. You know, 5 to 7% corrections are perfectly normal. We could be seeing that upon us. Time will tell. End of April is supposed to be strong. If it's not, then that's information too. Ian, we're running up against the end of our time. Anything else you want to touch base on that our listeners should know about?
Obviously, there's been weakness. You said earlier, this is going to be our first back-to-back red week since late October. So, I mean, basically 6 months, which, yeah, that's kind of a short-term.
Wait, are you telling me the market was strong during typically the strongest 6 months out of a 12-month period?
Yeah, and you know, back-to-back red weeks are pretty common. Still well above a 200-day moving average. We're still above 4,800. You know, not that I don't really want to go back and test 4,800. But, you know, below the 20-day moving average, coming into the 50. So this is actually a first test of the 50-day moving average since November 9th. Yeah, and, of course, it happened so quickly, right? So, you know, you give back 2 weeks of gains in a couple days. Everything is always so more dramatic and sharper to the downside. I think especially in this environment where, to use your term, there's a lot of people with 1 foot out the door and they are waiting for the first sign of weakness, which we've got a lot. We've had a lot of signs of weakness, and yet the market has continued to march higher. This, you know, a little bit more of a make you sit up and pay attention the last few days. We'll see. But very, very strong uptrend in the grand scheme of things.
And you have an environment where the VIX is sitting at 18.5. Typically, when you're up in this range in the 18s or 20s, right, that we bottom in the VIX in October of 23 in the low 20s. In some ways, it's impressive that the market isn't lower with the VIX at this
point. I mean, yeah, VIX is bottomed before Christmas. So we'll see. I think there's also, so I know this is blasphemy to some people. I think VIX also coming into a little bit of overhead trend, just where if you look at the rate of trend on VIX, you know, we bottomed October 23rd here, March 10th, 2023, October 2022. So,
like you said, the S&P 500's pulled back into a 50-day. We're approximately almost 3% off the highs in something like the S&P 500. This is the natural course of being involved in the market. And you'll notice that Ian and I are talking about this in a different context of this is all happening within an uptrend. So there's obviously counter trend moves that take place within an uptrend, just like there's counter trend moves that happen with the place of a downtrend. The market environment we have is a rising market. It's a uptrending market. It's from lower left to upper right. It's not a downtrending market from upper left to lower right on a weeks to months time frame, so a bigger time frame. So we're not going to be able to trade all the squiggles on the chart. There's going to be volatility, especially if you're exposed to an uptrend, which you should be, at least for our clients that we know and operate on behalf of. Anything else, Ian, before we wrap it up?
I don't have anything.
All I'll add are two things that if you listen to this and you appreciate it, if you could share it, and give us a high ranking if you appreciate it. That helps us get the word out. We like that. And I also like to highlight the support of this podcast, Adaptive Select ETF, which is listed on the New York Stock Exchange under ticker ADPV. Adaptive Select helps investors access two of the most prevalent factors in markets, momentum and relative strength. Through proprietary identification methods, the Adaptive Select ETF attempts to own the strongest 25 large cap stocks when the market is in an uptrend. And since not all market environments are the same, Adaptive Select seeks to prevent extended declines by moving to short-term treasury bills and cash during long-term market downtrends. Investors can find out more, including how to invest in ADPV, by visiting adpvetf.com or calling 1-833-880-5200. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. ADPV is distributed by Quasar Distributors, LLC. Ian, great to be back on here with you. I hope you have tremendous weather to continue your landscaping and gardening this weekend. It's springtime.
Have a great weekend, everyone.